May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Lee Harsett. I represent Piney Valley Ranches Trust, Daniel Leary, and Eric Applegate, the appellants in this matter, who I will at times refer to as the owners. I respectfully request 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, I will try to keep track of that.
Thank you. This is a case about the appellee, Horse Mountain Ranch Metropolitan District, recording multiple liens in excessive amounts against the owner's property, and whether the owner's claims challenging the validity of the liens recorded against their property somehow expired before those liens ever came into existence or were recorded. The owners respectfully ask this court to reverse the trial court's dismissal based upon statute of limitations grounds for two reasons. First, the owner's claims for declaratory relief were asserted in a timely manner after the district recorded three separate and distinct liens against the owner's property in excess of amounts.
Aren't the liens tied, though, to the underlying debt?
Presumably, Your Honor, they are. But in this case, the liens were never amended, they were never released, and the district did not move to foreclose upon those liens.
Don't we have to look, though, to the underlying debt to see whether the debt would have been foreclosed by a statute of limitations?
The debt in this case, Your Honor, that was claimed did not even arise until 2008 in September when the fees were first invoiced and then went unpaid. If that's addressing Your Honor's question,
it is.
Okay.
Mr. Harsett, I understand your 1983 claim has a reference to multiple statements of liens. Could you explain which portion of the pleadings, the complaint on the other claims, assess those filing of multiple statements of liens?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the complaint itself states that in the claim for relief on Section 1983, it specifically states that the actions that were, it says the assessing fees and recording multiple statements of liens were arbitrary, capricious, irrational, undertaken in bad faith. So Section 1983 claims directly predicated on the recording of multiple statements of lien. The complaint itself sets forth the first lien is discussed on the record at page 8. The second lien is discussed on the record at page 9. Third lien is discussed on the record at page 10, all in the complaint. With regards to the claims for declaratory relief, Rule 57 and CRS 13.5101 allow parties to seek declaratory judgments concerning the validity of legal instruments. This case is similar to the American Family Mutual Insurance holding in the sense that you have here a plaintiff that would otherwise have been a defendant in a foreclosure action, but the district wasn't pursuing this foreclosure action. Instead, the district continued to record multiple liens against the property in an aggregate amount more than double what the district was even claiming. So what happened here is the plaintiffs needed relief from uncertainty because their property was being encumbered by over $300,000 in liens when the district only claimed $146,000 in liens.
So let me ask you, if they had just filed liens for $146,000, would you not be here at all?
Well, presumably they would have foreclosed upon them, in this case, what happened is when the first lien was recorded, there was no action filed. The second lien was recorded, there was no action filed. When it was a third lien that was recorded in April of 2010, the action was filed later that month.
Didn't you challenge the underlying assessment as well as the lien based thereon?
Yes, because you have to challenge the validity of why that amount was owed.
But you challenged it with respect to the very first lien as well.
Correct, as to the amount that was specifically owed. Yes. But the owners did not object to the imposition of the annual fee in the first place, as the district argues. The owners did not challenge the district's assessment of the annual special fee. What the owners were challenging was the increase and the validity of the liens that were recorded against the property.
Did the owners allege in their complaint that under the stipulation in a prior case and under and prior litigation that they weren't obligated to pay any of that annual assessed fee?
Only as it pertains to certain lots. certain parcels. So the owners owned multiple parcels. These are 35-acre parcels. They weren't lots in a subdivision. I apologize for that misnomer. But they were parcels, and there's certain parcels that were subject to a prior stipulation of foreclosure order of the Eagle County District Court. So, yes. In this case, the statute of limitations defense is only appropriate where the bare allegations will show an action was not timely filed. The bare allegations in this complaint demonstrate that the claims for declaratory relief were timely filed. The owners paid the annual special fee every year through 2007. It was only when the district raised the fee in 2008 that the owners disputed and did not pay that fee. And again, that was in September of 2008. The district recorded its first lien in February of 2009 in the amount of $60,000, a little over. The second lien in February of 2010 in the amount of over $135,000. And the third lien in April in the amount of over $143,000. And again, as I stated earlier, the district never released or amended any of the prior liens. The district encumbered the property in an amount of double $338,787, what the district claimed is owed, which was $146,309. The district did not pursue a foreclosure action. The district was relying upon their liens to cloud the owner's title as leverage, force and compel the owners to pay the complete amount claimed as owed. The owners filed suit on April 15, 2010. This was only 14 months after the first lien was recorded. The owners sought a declaration regarding the validity of those liens that were recorded. The owners did not seek any refunds or credits for previously paid fees. Therefore, the owners' declaratory judgment claims were proper pursuant to Rule 57 in statute. The owners sought relief as an anticipated defendant, but could not otherwise have their question answered until the district took the initiative. The district was not taking the initiative. The owners were therefore compelled to do so. It's fundamental that the owners did not have sought a declaration challenging the recorded liens until those liens came into existence. Which leads me to the second point, which is very similar. The owner's Section 83 claim arose from the district's wrongful actions in recording multiple liens in excessive amounts. Again, the Section 1983 claim is not based upon the adoption of the annual fee in the first place. The Section 1983 claim is not based upon the increase in the annual fee. The Section 1983 claim is based upon the district's actions in wrongfully recording multiple liens against the owner's property in cumulative amounts far in excess of the amounts claimed as owed by the district. As I answered to your question earlier, it states in the complaint specifically that the arbitrary, capricious, and irrational actions that were taken with bad faith pretextual motives were the assessing of fees and recording of multiple statements of liens. The 1983 claim was based upon this recording, and that same 1983 claim arose at the earliest when the first lien was recorded, and that would have been on February 8th, 2009. The complaint was filed on April 15th, 2010, well within a two-year statute of limitation. And I didn't mean to interrupt a question.
You did not interrupt a question, counsel.
Okay.
I leap forward a lot of times, and I have nothing to say.
Okay. For these reasons, the appellant respectfully requests that the court reverse the trial court's determination dismissing the appellant's claims.
Thank you. You have just over 6 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Driscoll. I'm here on behalf of the Horse Mountain Ranch Metropolitan District. May it please the court. We believe that the trial court properly concluded that the statute of limitations did bar the owner's claims, and the underlying basis for that decision is that really what is at issue here is the owner's challenge the district's right to assess a fee. The liens produced a result of the owners refusing to pay that assessment.
Yeah, but the assessments are made on an annual basis. Why isn't this analogous to an income tax assessment, which can be challenged on an annual basis?
Well, this is, I think the Skyland case directly addresses this because it's very factually similar in which you had a special district assessing fees against the developer. And the issue in that case was, is when did the cause of action accrue when the developer challenged the fees? And the court in Skyland held that had accrued when the fees were assessed. That's when they knew that an injury occurred.
And the fees were assessed here in 2008 and 2009?
Well, the fees were initially assessed in 2000.
But there was no attempt to challenge the fees in 2000. They were only challenging the fees and the liens that resulted therefrom after 2008 and 2009.
Well, that's not what they said in their complaint, Your Honor. In their complaint, if you look at paragraph 17 of the complaint, they specifically identified that based on the court stipulation that you referenced in your questions to counsel, that the owners had no obligation due to responsibility to construct, maintain, or repair any road links in the district. And this was a stipulation that was entered into the lawsuit that the owners were a part of that was in existence before the special district was even created. And so this is something that came along with the creation of the special district. And then if you look at their specific...
But aren't they asserting that defense, so to speak, only with respect to the fees assessed in 2008-2009?
No, they're saying that they're not subject to fees, period.
For 2008-2009?
Anytime.
Well, did they try to go back and say the county owes us money for money we paid in the past?
They did not seek a refund or a credit. But that, in the Skyland case, that wasn't an issue for the courts, the trial court or the appellate court's decision in concluding that the cause of action accrued. Again, it's undisputed in this case that a two-year statute of limitations applies. And there's no dispute as to what the definition of accrual of cause of action is. And that definition is that they knew or should have known when they had an injury. They knew or should have known that they had an injury when the special fee was assessed, which they said in their complaint that they were not subject to at all. And so when you go to their specific claims for relief, the first claims for relief, paragraphs 46 through 48, they again reemphasize that there's a stipulation that says they have an obligation for roadway maintenance, that the district is bound by that stipulation, and then in paragraph 48, they say, based on that, they have no obligation to pay any assessments that are made by the district.
Yeah, Mr. Driscoll, isn't the placement of multiple liens a different type of injury than the assessment of the fee itself or the validity of the fee itself?
Well, I would agree with that, Your Honor, but still, the onset of the injury was the assessment of the fee to begin with. And so the manner of relief that they would seek would be different because they have the liens are enforced through the mechanics lien statute, and so under the mechanics lien statute, the owners have various defenses available to them that they could assert if they disagree with the amount of the lien.
But at the time the fees are assessed, let's say that, just for example, they decided that they think they shouldn't be assessed these fees, but it's not worth it to them. They're going to give up their right to assert that claim. How are they going to know that they're going to be putting multiple liens on the property at the time that the fee is assessed? I mean, if it's a different kind of injury, how can they see into the future and know that this different injury is going to occur?
Well, they know that if they don't pay the fee, that there's going to be an automatic lien imposed. The district has a statutory right to impose a perpetual lien based on the non-payment of fees. It's both a statutory right as well as a right under their district service plan.
Does the district have the right to impose excessive liens?
Well, the mechanics lien statute would say no, the district doesn't feel that they impose excessive liens.
I know, but you know, if there's a debate or argument over that, doesn't the person have a right to challenge what they think would be an excessive lien?
They do, Your Honor, but a declaratory relief action in a Section 1983 action would not be the appropriate mechanism for challenging that, because what they're doing here is in that case, then you would have a piecemeal litigation where you're going to have ongoing uncertainty.
What is the appropriate mechanism for challenging the excessive liens then?
Well, I would leave that up to the owner to determine the point.
No, well, I'm asking you to help me determine that. Can you help me determine what the appropriate mechanism would be? You're saying this one's inappropriate, then give me an appropriate one.
They could file an action that said that an excessive lien was filed and that they're not subject to paying any fees. I mean, the mechanics lien statute provides them that recourse.
I suggest that their complaint may have said that in other words here.
Well, the complaint combined their contention that they did not owe any, they were not obligated to pay any fees, in conjunction with their claim that the lanes that were fired by the district were excessive. But also under the fencing statute, the district has the authority to file new and amended liens, and their counterclaim makes clear the amount that they're asking for, which is $143,000. But the point, you know, that's kind of a tangential point, because the point here is, when did their cause of action accrue? And the trial court held that that accrued when the special fees were imposed. And again, the Skyline case is very factually similar, and the law is directly on point on that. The Meyerstein case also provides support to that conclusion, in which there was a rent control deed restriction, and the owner challenged that once that deed restriction was enforced by the municipality. And the appellate court said, well, no, your cause of action accrued when you bought the property and you were aware of that deed restriction. You know, your cause of action didn't accrue when they took action to enforce the deed restriction.
Can they ever challenge an increase in special fees under your theory?
Well, they can challenge it administratively. They can challenge it through the district processes. Then if the district takes legal action to enforce it.
So they wouldn't have a cause of action. A cause of action could be timely asserted just through a different vehicle.
Well, hypothetically, yes, but that's not the facts of this case. Because here again, they're disputing that they're not obligated to pay any fee whatsoever.
For 2008 and 2009?
Well, no, they paid the fee up through 2004. They paid it, and then they paid it under protest in 2005 through 2007.
And they paid it, and are they challenging their payments of those fees here?
Well, they said that they paid it under protest, so at that point in time, they were indicating that they didn't believe in 2005 to 2007 that they owed those fees. And they just simply stopped paying it in 2008. The case, the Duell versus United Bank case that the court cited in its order of dismissal, also supports that of when the cause of action accrues in this circumstance. Again, the issue in that case is when does the cause of action accrue, and that involves a developer trying to get subdivision financing through the bank, and the bank sold some of the developer's collateral, and then later the bank refused to fund the subdivision, and the developer argued that the cause of action accrued when they refused to fund subdivision, and the appellate court said no, when your cause of action accrued when you suffered injury.
Was that a tort case, counsel?
No, sir.
It was not a tort case?
No, sir. So, in conclusion, you know, we believe that the trial court correctly concluded that the cause of action accrued when the special fee was assessed in this case. That is the underlying basis for the owner's contention here, that they don't owe any fees that the district imposes. They eventually refused to pay those fees, and the liens were the onset of that. So we ask this court to affirm the trial court order dismissal. Thank you.
Counsel, why isn't Skyline dictated result different than what you want?
Skyline's facts are distinctly different, Your Honor. Skyline, the districts in Skyline, which I'll refer to as the Skyline districts because there were multiple districts in that case, they assessed availability of service fees, which I'll refer to as ASF fees as it's referred to in the case. In that case, the Skyline districts initiated the action. They didn't leave it upon the party who was being leaned to initiate the action. Skyline districts initiated that action. The Skyline districts actually sought a declaration regarding the validity of the liens. The same claims that were asserted in this case, in that case, the Skyline districts asserted them. They sought a declaration that those liens were valid, and then they moved to foreclose upon them. The developers asserted counterclaims in that matter. There was a declaratory judgment for the amount of ASF and late charges that the Skyline districts could charge. They also sought damages for unjust enrichment and overpayments. That case went to trial. It was not resolved on a dispositive motion. The Skyland Court distinguished between ASF already paid, fees already paid, and unpaid fees. The Skyland Court actually allowed the developers to contest the unpaid ASF fees. The panel of this court overturned the trial court's judgment in favor of the districts in that case on the amount of the ASF fees properly owed. The Skyland Court remanded back to the trial court the issue regarding the proper amount of unpaid fees. That is exactly what is happening in this case. The Skyland Court only determined that the statute of limitation had run on developers' claims for credit or refund of the ASF. Here, unlike Skyland, the owners do not seek any credit or refund. And I want to be clear on that because counsel for the district stated they weren't sure. Well, the complaint on its face is clear. There is no claim for credit or refund for any fees paid prior to 2008. All the claims arise from the fees that were assessed in 2008. Thus, if you take the proper analysis of Skyland, it actually supports the appellant's position here that the court should reverse the trial court dismissal and allow the owner's claims regarding the propriety of the propriety of the lease and the amount of unpaid fees that were owed. I'd also like to address the Meyerstein case briefly, which counsel for appellee stated. That similarly does not support the position set forth by appellee. In that case, the plaintiff asserted a Section 1983 claim against city-related defendants. The plaintiff claimed that the defendants violated the right to use and enjoyment of property. That plaintiff claimed three bases for its suit: imposition of an unlawful deed restriction, issuance of a notice of violation for the improper use, and interference with the plaintiff's contract with a third party. The Meyerstein Court determined that two of the Section 1983 claims were barred: the original imposition of the unlawful deed restriction and the issuance of the notice of violation for the improper use that related back to that. But the Meyerstein Court refused to dismiss the 1983 claim for interference with contract. On its face, the Meyerstein Court determined the complaint alleged that the actions leading to that Section 1983 claim occurred within the two-year statute of limitations period. Here, the owner's Section 1983 claim is not based upon the initial adoption of the special fee. Rather, the 1983 claim is based upon the district's continued imposition and wrongful actions in recording multiple liens in excessive amounts. The district's actions in this regard occurred within the two-year statute of limitations, as I discussed earlier, just as in Meyerstein. Thus, an analysis under Meyerstein would also mandate that this court reverse the trial court dismissal and allow the Section 1983 claim to proceed just as it did in Meyerstein. One final point on rebuttal is that there's a discussion here about when the onset or the injury occurred and whether it was the adoption of the fee. That's not what the complaint states. The complaint has been mischaracterized by the appellees in an attempt to view the complaint in the light most favorable to the appellees. But the appellees were the movement who sought dismissal in this case. They're not entitled to the favorable inferences. Rather, when the favorable inferences are viewed in the light most favorable to the appellants, and when the complaint is viewed in that light and read with regards to what we've discussed before, the Skyland case, the Meyerstein case, and the recorded claims and statutory authority, when it's viewed in those light most favorable, it will mandate reversal of the trial court's determination. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.